The Business News Hour is made possible through the support of RE/MAX Real Estate Concepts with offices throughout the metro. Learn more at homeconnectusa.com. And the Strudel House Fine Austrian Dining. Ask about the gourmet passport, thestrudelhouse.com.
Welcome back to the News Hour, everybody. Grateful that you guys are hanging out with us this afternoon on a Thursday as you motor home from work. With us in studio is Boris Sharansky, Aaron Shaneman, and Chris Disbro. And they are with the Iowa Hemp Association. Now, I just mentioned Boris Sharansky, and we got to go there, Boris, because you know somebody out there is driving along the road right now and going, Sharansky. I know that name. Your uncle?
Yeah, my uncle is Natan Sharansky. For those who don't know, he was a Soviet dissident and a refusenik. He spent 9 years in the Gulag. And actually, 30 years ago today was when he was exchanged for, as a part of a prisoner exchange between the U.S. and Russia, and Ronald Reagan helped negotiate that exchange across the Glinicki Bridge in Germany.
And today is the 30th anniversary
today
of that walk.
Today is the 30th anniversary of that walk. And the funny thing about that walk, and just one second sure. that I can give a story, his favorite part about it was it was the last step of defiance against the Soviet Union, because when he was leaving his imprisoners, the KGB on the east side, they said, now walk straight and don't look back. He said, I won't look back, but I definitely won't walk straight. And so he took a zigzag the entire way across the bridge just to mess with them one last time.
Wow. And he is kind of busy today on the 30th anniversary of
that
famous
walk. Yeah, there was an article about him in the Times of Israel. I believe he's speaking somewhere today. Stanford? Yeah,
Chris
Stanford, I believe.
Stanford,
yeah. So, he's all around here in the U.S. right now.
What an interesting thing. And so gracing the stage here at Insight on Business, the News Hour, the nephew of Natan Sharansky. Cool stuff. Well, let's talk about some hemp, shall
Absolutely.
We?
Absolutely.
I think this is a fascinating discussion. And one of those things, when I mentioned to somebody here at the studio that you guys were coming in to talk about hemp, they go, oh, marijuana. So, well, no, not exactly. Aaron, tell us a little bit about this hemp thing.
Sure.
How does it have such a bad name?
Well, hemp gets its bad name because it really got grouped in with marijuana at the beginning of the 1900s when the U.S. had a big anti-propaganda campaign against marijuana.
It was called Reefer Madness, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was. And, you know, up until 1937 when the Marijuana Tax Act was passed, farmers were allowed to grow hemp, but since that passage, and only one other time in history, which was during World War II, has the U.S. allowed its farmers to grow hemp.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I had no knowledge of this up until Aaron and I were talking just the other day, Boris, about the hemp production here in the United States. It was huge at one time.
Well,
cars
in fact,
were made out of it.
Well, that's the interesting thing. We talked about Reefer Madness, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason that really resonated here in the U.S. Was because we didn't know the cannabis plant as something you could smoke or use as a recreational substance traditionally in the 1800s. We used hemp in Kentucky. In Kentucky actually had one-third of the hemp processing and production in the entire United States, and the rest was split around the rest of the United States. In 1931, until cannabis became illegal in 1937, Iowa became the largest producer of hemp in the United States, actually. That's a small tidbit of knowledge. But since we never had that experience culturally of smoking it, yellow journalism, Reefer Madness picked up on Latinos and jazz musicians, African Americans smoking this plant, whereas before we only had them really in pharmacies as tinctures or oils that were prescribed by doctors. There was a medical cannabis movement even in the early 20th century. But since there was a smoking menace that was propagated, hemp got confused with marijuana. You know, at the same time that they were making marijuana illegal through the Marijuana Tax Stamp Act in 1937, Popular Mechanics released an article calling hemp the next billion-dollar cash crop. And that's in 1936 dollars, by the way. We had also developed new technology to process hemp fibers. Henry Ford had actually developed a methanol plant at Iron Mountain, Michigan, where he was processing hemp cellulose into methanol. And he developed the first bioplastic car made out of hemp plastic at that same facility.
This is a fascinating history. And I would suspect that people that are traveling down the road right now are going, what?
Well, what? It's funny. In 1937, we had the first biodiesel, ethanol car made out of bioplastic. Now, just fast forward to 80 years later, BMW, Mercedes, Dodge, they're all using hemp bioplastic in their car door panels. The reason is it's stronger than petroleum-based plastics, and it's lighter. So it creates a great amount of efficiency, especially in these light electric cars.
It's fascinating stuff. Okay, so let's talk about the confusion between hemp and marijuana. Now, Aaron, you were telling me just the other day that the chemical,
sure, THC.
THC, thank you. THC is not available, or is there, but it's not enough. What's the story?
There's 0.03 or 0.3% rather THC in hemp, and that's where the U.S. government classifies what hemp is anything with 0.3 or below percent. And with that, there have been a couple of studies that have been done that say you need much more than that to actually feel anything like getting high if you were to smoke it. And, you know, there are people that I talk to who are farmers who will say, and they'll tell you very, very honestly, that if you smoked an entire field of it, you still wouldn't get high.
Well, this was such a popular product, or a byproduct, if you will. They used to call it ditchweed. I mean, there was hemp growing all over the place here in Iowa because, A, it's hard to kill, I guess, mm-hmm. and B, pretty easy to grow.
Well, ditchweed actually came from a couple of different places. One place it comes from is in the 1918 through 1935. We actually had pharmaceutical farms here in Iowa with four processing facilities. Eli Lilly actually created a cannabis oil that was used in pharmacies and prescribed by doctors at the time. So we grew that in Iowa, and that never left. And then in 1942, an interesting thing happened. Even though we had made hemp illegal in 1937, the Japanese had taken over the Philippine Islands, which is our main source of, you guessed it, hemp. And that's what clothed our soldiers. That's what created parachutes. That's what lubricated our engine oils for all the planes. And so in 1943, guess what? We grew 48,000 acres of hemp here in Iowa to support the war effort. Sponsored by ISU. It was called Hemp for Victory, Iowa Hemp for Victory Campaign. And we grew 48,000 along with the rest of the United States. I believe we grew over 100,000 acres of hemp.
This is nuts. Yeah. I mean, this is just really crazy. This is a history lesson that now people are writhing about just right up the state house. I mean, they're talking about medical marijuana mm-hmm. and cannabis and oils and all of these things. And to think that Iowa used to be a major producer of these types of products at one time mm-hmm. is just astounding, I think, to most folks.
Absolutely. What also happened, and this is another tidbit that I always like to share with people, is that the United States right now currently is the largest single consumer of hemp products in the entire world. We imported last year $650 million worth of hemp products, and that doesn't include the plastics and the fibers that I talked to you about. That's just food and cosmetics and little knickknacks here and there.
So why not grow it?
Well, that's the problem. We have China growing it. We have Canada growing it. We have Europe growing it. Every single industrialized nation in the world grows hemp, except for the United States.
Okay. And so let's fast forward outside of the area of production of product. Mm-hmm. I would suspect, just guessing, that maybe hemp might be a pretty good biofuel.
Yes, there are two types of biofuel you can make from hemp. Obviously, there's ethanol.
Ethanol.
Now, right now, we're trying to squeeze orange juice out of a lemon, right? Trying to make ethanol out of corn in corn stover, because it's really not an efficient source of cellulose. So we have two big plants here in Iowa, DuPont and in Emmitsburg, DuPont Biorefinery, right. which in times of low oil prices are stalled. There's two reasons for that. One, they have an inefficient process for converting corn stover to ethanol. So they have about 60 to 65% efficiency there. With a higher cellulose content of hemp, you can convert the pulp and hemp to 99% to sugar, which then creates ethanol. So you already make the process more efficient. On the other side, you can press hemp seed and use it as a biodiesel. So I actually imagine the day I saw an engine running in Colorado running on pure biodiesel, and then they switched to diesel, and then they switched to hemp biodiesel. No power drop, no output drop, no nothing. It stayed exactly the same. So their vision is actually developing the combines and powering them with the same fuel that we're growing here. Replace the sheiks of the Middle East with the farmers of the Midwest, basically.
Fabulous news. I mean, just really interesting. So what's the sticky point? Why are not people paying more attention to this, Aaron?
Well, I think that a lot of people are still getting caught up and confusing marijuana with hemp. And because of that, it's really difficult to break through the stigma of, you know, the reefer madness that was created at the beginning of the 1900s with the reefer madness. But, you know, the more that we talk about this with the Iowa Hemp Association, we've been going around Iowa and doing educational type events and presentations in different rural areas and to farmers. And they're really starting to come around to it. And they know that hemp is the Iowa ditchweed. Yeah. So they're already very familiar with it. It's just the getting everybody else who, you know, might not be as familiar with it as an agricultural commodity.
Well, I think, you know, if you take a look, we just had a story on just this half hour, as a matter of fact, talking about is Iowa headed for a recession because of falling ag prices, mm-hmm. falling land prices, falling ag prices, falling machinery manufacturing here in Iowa. And, of course, we're insulated by lots of those other things that are out here, mm-hmm. technology and service sector and financials. But it would seem to me that, you know, if I'm a farmer out there and I'm getting 350 today. Yeah. For a bushel of corn, I might want to turn my 4,000 acres to hemp and make some money.
You know, I don't mean to throw numbers at you, but the National Hemp Association just came out with metrics, and they show that with subsidies, current prices, hemp outperforms corn by a 6x margin, 6x multiple. Without subsidies, it's a 9x. Without subsidies, it's 9x. So, and that comes basically from right now, major health food manufacturers are paying between $2 and $2.35 a pound of hemp seed. And the farmers in Kentucky and Colorado that are growing hemp commercially have been able to produce up to 1,200 pounds an acre. So you do the math there.
Yeah. Oh, my.
And that's just seed. We're not talking about processing the stock. We're not talking about creating hempcrete from it. We're not even talking about any of the ancillary benefits to the economy, such as we need processing equipment, right? So machine shops here will be developing processing equipment. John Deere sells 85% of the world's hemp harvesting combines, and they're sold in Canada and the U.S. Imagine if we opened up Iowa to them.
Wow. Fabulous conversation. Thanks. We've got to get Chris over here because we've taken his picture for crying out loud, and we've got to put him on the air to talk. What do you get to do with these guys, Chris?
Well, I'm actually the current president of the Iowa Hemp Association, and so a lot of what I'm doing
Presidente.
Thank you, sir.
Was it a tough election?
You know what? It wasn't
a
tough
one.
We didn't have to do a lot of mudslinging. Okay. It was clean and cordial.
All right.
But yeah, a lot of what I'm doing is helping to arrange these educational events, getting in touch with farmers, and trying to basically get the word out so we can help with this education process. We're also actually looking at some mentorship and training programs so that we can bring Kentucky farmers here, send Iowa farmers there, and really do some of the hands-on job training that will make, when we implement it here ourselves, give us a leg up so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We
sure.
can take advantage of
so
that.
So what do you think will move this along? Will the public getting behind something like this? Will that move legislation to say, hey, wait a minute, hold off? Is this a federal issue that we're fighting, or is it a state issue?
Well, that's the beauty of this. So a lot of people confuse marijuana and hemp, correct?
Right. Yeah.
But here's a legal difference that's very, very important to point out. On a federal level, marijuana is still illegal. Whatever we think about that, it is what it is. Hemp, however, was made legal in 2014 through the Federal Farm Bill. There's a section there that allows states that authorize industrial hemp programs through a state Department of Agriculture to have those programs and to commercialize that crop.
Mm.
So as long as you sign on and pass legislation here, then the farmers here will be open to actually growing the crop.
Unbelievable. So that's what you're looking at.
Well, as Iowa Hemp Association, we're trying to spread the word and spread information. Just a few weeks ago, we were at ISU at the Agriculture and Entrepreneurship Program. I've already had students email me back asking, you know, to do their project papers on the, you know, capability of standardizing seed or creating certified seed. You know, a number of very interesting projects they're promoting just as a, you know, ISU project.
We have just, I feel like we've just scratched the surface of this. There's so much information. and perhaps even misinformation about hemp. You can find out more by going to the Iowa Hemp Association. We'll have links of all this on our podcast page and be doing that a little bit later. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Aaron. Thanks, Boris.
Thank you a lot.
Thank you very much.
Good stuff, guys.
Appreciate
really
your time.
Very, very interesting. And I know as topical as this is, I suspect the shares of this particular podcast are going to be huge. So
we certainly hope so.
Yeah, I would hope so. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
A whole bunch. All right. We've got to step aside. We've got the Wall Street Report coming up next. We'll take a look at what happened today on the stock market. Also, the Iowa 25 and the commodities. We were just talking about corn. So how did corn do today? And oil? Ooh, ouch. All that coming up next on the News Hour.
This is a story about Billy Joe and Bobby Sue. Two young lovers with nothing better to do.